Spirit 88.9 FM, Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning. I'm Bruce McGregor. She is
Chris McGregor.
And this is Spirit Mornings. And we're delighted on this, the feast day of St. Polycarp, to have with us Mike Aquilina, author of the book, The Fathers of the Church, An Introduction to the First Christian Teachers. And Mike, good morning. Welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me back on this great feast day.
I can't imagine a better way of starting this Thursday out. Having Mike Aquilina with us to talk about yet another father of the church.
Yep. And such an important father, too, St. Polycarp.
Well, we're going to learn more about him in just a few moments, but I also want to take this time to encourage people, now that we're getting close to Lent, and everybody's looking for Lenten practices,
You
absolutely will want to start Living the Mysteries, A Guide for Unfinished Christians by Scott Hahn and Mike Aquilina. It is a wonderful way of really entering into the spiritual riches that the church fathers have kept for us and want to share with us. And it takes you week by week, and it's perfect for Lent, don't you think, Mike?
Well, I think so. It's also good for the Easter season. It'll take you through day by day, and it gives you readings from the actual fathers. I agree. It's good devotional reading, and it comes from the fathers themselves.
Absolutely fantastic. And also, of course, the book, Bruce, that you have in your hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Fathers of the Church, An Introduction to the First Christian Teachers. And with that, let's just dive into St. Polycarp here, Mike. He probably is one of the most well-connected guys in the Catholic Church, and ultimately kind of a bridge between the apostles that were here and the beginnings of what we call our tradition.
Well-connected is a good phrase, Bruce, because in Polycarp we have someone who very early in life was a disciple of the Apostle John, and then he managed to live a long life so that he was able to disciple the next generation, including Saint Irenaeus of Lyon, so that we have this bridge going from the Apostle John almost to the year 200, because Saint Irenaeus was still telling stories about both Polycarp and John at the time of his death around 200. He's such an important and pivotal figure because he's someone who wasn't a great intellectual, but he was someone who was intensely devoted to the apostolic tradition, what he had received from the apostles, and he was devoted to faithful keeping of that tradition.
Right.
A fascinating life when you think about it, because we have always been told that St. John has lived for many, many years, unlike the other apostles who were almost, if I'm not mistaken, Mike, all martyred.
They were, and John lived almost to the end of that century. Polycarp was probably born about 69 A.D., because he gives his age in the account of his martyrdom, which was probably written in the year of his martyrdom. He gives his age at that time as 86 years old.
Right.
He says that he had been serving Jesus Christ for 86 years. So we can assume that he was baptized as an infant, and he was 86 years old then, and he had been bishop of Smyrna, which is in modern Turkey, for many years at that point. Tradition tells us, Tertullian witnesses to the fact that he was named as bishop of Smyrna by the Apostle John himself. One of the interesting things about Polycarp is even though he was a humble man, he really was one of the few celebrities of that time because of his holiness.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And because of his martyrdom. So many of the early Christians witnessed to the life of Polycarp. We have Ignatius, who predates Polycarp, writing about 105-107 A.D., and he writes a letter to Polycarp. He also visits with Polycarp. Then we have Irenaeus, who's a disciple of Polycarp, who wrote quite extensively about him. Tertullian, in that same generation, or a little bit later, actually, witnesses to his life. And then the church historian, Eusebius, gives us quite a lot of information about Polycarp. So he's very important for church history just because his life is so well attested.
It must have been a difficult time in the life of the church because, if I recall properly, so many of them, when they lived during the time of Jesus and those early apostles, thought that the coming of the Lord would come in their lifetime.
Well, that may be true. That may be true. And there may have been an adjustment at that time of expectations. But what we find with Polycarp is that he's giving people just steady advice. He's giving them steady advice for moral living, righteousness. He keeps referring to righteousness. He wants them to live righteous lives, no matter whether the coming of Christ is tomorrow or the day after or whenever, because Christ comes to them in the Eucharist all the mm-hmm. time. Polycarp's teaching is richly Eucharistic. It's informed by the Eucharist. We find that especially in the account of his martyrdom, which took place about 155 or 156 A.D.
Mm-hmm. He was, for lack of a better way of saying it, hounded.
Yes, he was. He was chased. And the interesting thing about him, and one thing that his biographer points out, is that he didn't present himself for martyrdom. He didn't go looking for martyrdom. He first tried to save his life by removing to a farmhouse and hiding out, really. But once they tracked him down, he didn't do anything extraordinary to escape.
Right.
He presented himself peacefully to his persecutors. He was kind to them. He made sure they had something to eat. He
yeah.
showed hospitality to them. And he just asked that they give him a little time to pray, which they did. It's a remarkable thing.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, really, when he was taken back for his martyrdom, I mean, he was actually kind of treated like a celebrity, being driven around in a chariot and everything until he refused to budge, and then they kind of like chucked him off like so much baggage.
That's right. Well, people wanted to touch him. We find that he was treated. His sayings were treated as infallible because he was heading to martyrdom.
And
this was a great thing. We find the same thing in St. Ignatius, where he teaches with authority in many cities that were not his episcopal see, just because he's on his way to martyrdom, and the martyr had a certain authority. With the story of Polycarp, what's interesting is that we find his story contrasted in that account with the account of another man who presents himself for martyrdom, but then chickens out.
Right.
So there's obviously advice there that you don't go in a foolhardy way with some kind of false courage, presenting yourself for martyrdom. Martyrdom is a grace, and if you receive it, that's great. And he did receive it, and he witnessed to the faith to the end. It's a very Eucharistic ending. And his secretary, who took down the account of his trial, records that when Polycarp was burning at the stake, his body didn't give off the stench of burning flesh, but the aroma of baking bread. And Polycarp himself gives a long prayer that's reminiscent of a Eucharistic prayer.
Yes.
Speaks of the sharing of a cup and of a sacrifice that would be acceptable to the Lord. So it's all done in very Eucharistic terms.
Right.
You know, when you think about it, Mike, that second generation of Christians who actually did not experience Christ firsthand, mm-hmm. the way they lived their life and the way they embraced their death in that martyrdom, being willing to make that sacrifice, really is the bedrock, because it's as our Lord had said, you know, blessed are the eyes that have not seen but still believe.
That's right, and their lives and their deaths themselves were witnesses to Christ. The biographer of Polycarp is very careful to show this because his life and death parallel the life and death of our Lord Jesus. We find Polycarp riding into the city on a donkey. We find him having a last meal with his disciples. We find so many things that run parallel to the Gospels. Also, it's clear that some of the authorities really don't want to put an old man to death.
Mm-hmm.
And they give him a lot of opportunities to renounce the faith, and they're kind of hoping that he will so that they don't have to go through with this.
Right.
And there's even a funny exchange where the judge encourages him to say, away with the atheists,
right.
Down with the Christians, because they called the Christians atheists.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Christians rejected the Roman gods. So he says, you know, tell them, away with the atheists. And Polycarp turns toward the crowd of pagans, and he waves to them, and he says, away with the atheists.
Right.
Meaning the crowd of pagans.
Right.
It's a funny line. It's amazing he could keep his sense of humor under those circumstances. That's grace under pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And he certainly did have, it would seem, a bit of that... biting wit, too. He tells the story in your book of his meeting with Marcion.
Oh, right, right. The heretic.
Yes.
Who himself rejected the Old Testament and then provided an edited version of St. Luke's Gospel and St. Paul, taking out all the Old Testament references.
Hmm.
Well, he was a notorious heretic. He had moved to Rome. He was also fabulously wealthy,
yep,
like an Aristotle Onassis in his mm-hmm. wealth. He was a shipping magnate, so he had a lot of money to spread his bad ideas around. Well, he heard that that Polycarp was in town to visit with the Pope, and he sought him out, and he walked up to him, and he said, "Don't you recognize me?" And he said, "Of course I recognize you. I recognize you as the firstborn of Satan."
Yeah.
So we see that Polycarp is very much like St. John, his master, in that he had this horror of heresy.
Right.
Mm.
And there were many heresies springing up at that time, and they tended to go to Rome because they wanted to be near the center of the action, and they wanted to have that kind of corrupting power right there at the center.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So at the time Polycarp visited Rome, which would have been about 151 A.D., very late in his life, shortly before his martyrdom, he would have encountered heretics like Marcion and also Valentinus, who was a Gnostic heretic of the same era.
Right.
He really had a loathing for heresy, and that comes through not only in his letter, where he references heretics in his midst in that church,
right,
but also it also comes through in the accounts of Irenaeus, when Irenaeus is remembering him from his childhood.
It's so important. I've said it before. It's so important to remember the witness of these fathers, our ancestors in faith, and what they were willing to give up and lay down their lives to be able to say this. And it's important that we carry that on. So when we encounter heresy, especially when so many are so quick to embrace it, and okay, I'll say it, the Da Vinci Code and Dan Brown and how somehow this was invented in the year 300, it is such an insult to the life of Polycarp.
It is, and just because the age of persecution, the Roman persecution, is over, that doesn't mean that we aren't called to the same kind of total self-giving that Polycarp was called to. St. Jerome had a great line. You know, St. Jerome lived during the peace of the church, mm-hmm, after Christianity had been legalized,
mm-hmm,
and lots of people were getting nostalgic for martyrdom. Well, Jerome told them, you know, don't get nostalgic.
Yeah.
He said, mm-hmm, there's always martyrdom. There's always martyrdom. So even today, we're called to that kind of heroic witness and that heroic self-giving. We're called to witness to the truth of the gospel in the face of these crazy things like the Da Vinci Code and any other challenge to the faith. And there's no shortage of these challenges. All you have to do is, you know, pick up a number of the secular newspapers or tune in to some of the cable news networks. It's
right.
Crazy.
That's right. Well, at least we have you to help us to know better, Mike.
Well, we have the fathers to help us, and I'm glad to bring them to a wider public today.
Oh, we appreciate it. And one thing, too, we do want to point out was that ultimately St. Polycarp had to be daggered to death because the fire did not do him in.
Right, right.
Wow.
It made a wall around him and baked him like bread.
Yeah, amazing.
It is. I'm reminded of the three young men in, I think it's the book of Daniel, isn't it?
Yes.
Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego.
Right.
That's wow, that came back to me.
Oh.
Whoa.
And on that scary note, Mike, thanks so much for sharing with us today on this feast day of St. Polycarp. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy spending the time.
Absolutely. And we encourage everyone to pick up a copy of The Fathers of the Church, An Introduction to the First Christian Teachers, by the one, the only, Mike Aquilina. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.